Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
Oh, good morning, Bay Area. What is going on? Warriors this week with Evan Giddings, Steven Rizzotto in studio, and the fantastic Jake Hutchinson joining us, sitting in for Dan DeVone for the next 3 hours from 9 to noon. What's going on, everyone? What's going on, Jake? How we feeling, my man?
Feeling good. We got some Warriors to talk. It's going to be an interesting week to recap here. They've been having some weird. They're just a weird team, man. I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, the Golden State Purgatories. It feels like it's kind of where they've been stuck, right? Yeah, I don't know how you feel about this because look, you cover the Niners for us. You do a fantastic job. You also cover the Warriors. You can go check out all of Jake's work on Odyssey's website. And look, it's like you never want to be right where the Warriors have been seemingly for the last, I don't know, like 2.5 seasons, right? They're 19-19. They're tied in ninth with Sacramento, but they're just stuck in the middle. And it doesn't feel like there's anything, at least for, the remaining, month of January that's going to change that drastically. Outside of maybe getting healthy, I don't know if there's another piece out there. Before we get into all the trade machinations, before we get into some of the spicy quotes that we got from earlier this week and the Warriors as a whole, just kind of where are you at with them right now? Because everyone wants to be great or be terrible, and the Warriors seem to be unable to do either.
Well, that's the thing. I think in life, I think especially in sports specifically, the worst place to be is square in the middle, right? It's just hard because you don't have a clear direction. And it's just hard to stomach that where you're like, what are we? And you can sort of make an argument in either direction. You're like, actually, we're really good. We just need a couple pieces together. I think that is sort of people are giving up on that idea with this Warriors team. But like, there's no clear direction. When you're terrible, you're saying, all right, we're young. We're gonna rely on these young guys. We're going to build for the future. But the Warriors with Steph and with Draymond, you're clinging to these dying embers of a dynasty. And you're like, we got to get Steph the last chip. But I think there's a realization and understanding that that might just not even be possible. Like, how many moves can you make with the new salary cap, which is something that's not sexy, but it is the reality of, like, you used to be able to do a lot more and be more flexible with moves. And people are like, go get Jimmy Butler. It's like, all right, well, you can trade 6 players, and then you're going to have 3 old guys who can't get through the season. That doesn't really solve your problem. So they're in this, like, uncomfortable middle ground of, like, what are we? And Steph, earlier this week, was basically like, I don't know. You saw it. It's like this existential dread of the middle ground.
Yeah, I think it's funny you mentioned, like, the aprons. Like, the apron era to me, I don't know if it started off well. And I personally blame C.J. McCollum for this because he's the president of the Players Association. Agreed.
They did a terrible job.
To this madness. Yeah, if you're a player, you got, I mean, your price floor is being suppressed as we speak. But the thing about it is, like, I don't know necessarily how much it helps the NBA. I think it came at a really poor time for the Warriors because they're stuck with albatrosses and they're also an aging team. So the only players that you can really pair successfully with older players are other older players who have been grandfathered into this new age with a bunch of massive money that you don't want to pay to a 34 or 35 year old. But back before the apron was a thing, it was just about how big of a check you could cut. And the Warriors didn't necessarily seem to be afraid to cut that check. Even last year, like, yes, they paid the most exorbitant tax bill in the history of basketball. And they cut wages this year, but it was because they were literal consequences for it. Now it's like, in the NBA, it just feels like player movement or star player movement, it's going to become drastically more difficult. And I realize that it might help some of the, I don't know, some of the homegrown teams.
Yeah.
But overall, what makes the NBA great in my mind is like the drama and all the movement that's possible out there. And it feels like if this was a deadline, say, 5 years ago, like Jimmy Butler would be gone.
Oh, no question about it.
And all of these other players, maybe it's Zion or other big names that we're talking about, would be on the move and somebody would be getting fleeced. And we'd be talking about this team versus that team, and the Warriors might legitimately have a chance to be in the mix, but because of what age we live in, this is not, it doesn't really feel either realistic or teams are still hesitant to really dive into it.
Right. And the Warriors, because of how injured they are and because of, you know, starting the season where we're doing, you know, 13, 14 people are all involved, just, you're using so many different pieces. You still don't have a clear idea of, like, what works, if there is something that works. And at this point, it feels like if the Warriors don't get like a hot shooting night from Buddy Hield or like Dennis Schroeder, they don't really have a chance. And they like survived one with Curry going ice cold the other night.
Yeah.
And it's just like you look at them matching up against any team pretty much, except for like the bottom of the barrel teams. And you just look and you're like, I don't feel like they should have a shot in this game. Like, every time I've watched them line up against the Minnesota Timberwolves, physically they're outmatched. They just don't have the talent to match up. And it's like they've got some crafty guys. They can slow the game down and play good defense. But, like, they don't have any sort of consistent recipe. And I think that's sort of what Steph got at earlier this week. It's like, if you're going to make a move, like, yeah, Vucevic is a guy I think we'll talk about as this show goes on. If Chicago, which is like a stubbornly like does not trade very often team, even decides to do something like that. But it's hard for them outside of like a stretch five to be like, what can even make us a contender? And I think that's the frustration where you're like, what do we do? And you're just stuck in this reality that because of this new CBA, you might be stuck knowing this is our team, and we're just going to be really mediocre and hope something clicks.
Yeah, I mean, I threw out the word of the month, which is just endure, last week. Like, you kind of have to endure this stretch. And that's why, like, I know that it wasn't pretty by any means. And last night, I actually did enjoy the fight that the Warriors put together. You know, it's not a game that you're going to lock in and say, oh, you know, I want to see 20 minutes of Pat Spencer, and I got to see what Quentin Post right. is doing. Although he is, I don't know, maybe
they were
a
promising fun.
Player. Yeah, but the fact that they were able to fight against a pretty whole Indiana Pacers group that is playing good basketball themselves, like, that's the kind of effort that they're going to need every night. It doesn't mean they're going to win, because talent and cream eventually will rise to the top, but you get a victory that's needed against the Pistons, though you almost threw it away. You fight against Indiana. Of course, you got at least a couple of days between now and Toronto on Monday. Like, that's what Warriors basketball, I hate to break it to people, is going to look yeah. like, at least until the end of the month, at least until you start to get some of these pieces back, because, I mean, they only had 10 guys in a uniform yesterday.
Yeah. And I think that last night, for those of you who watched, which, I mean, good on you for sticking with them in a game where there's no Steph, no Draymond, no Wiggins, no Kuminga, no Pods, and they fought. And I think it reminded me a little bit of when they played the Nets, when the Nets had Schroeder and Schroeder killed them. But the Nets had a bunch of, like, truly random guys out there just playing really hard. And I think an unstated reality of the NBA is that most of the time, guys are going like 70, 75% in the regular season until like the clutch minutes, because that's kind of how you have to sustain, and that's reality. But when you have guys who are desperate and young out there, like Guy Santos and Pat Spencer, who are going 100% the entire time, that can level the playing field a little bit, just because they are desperate. They're willing to change the speed of the game, and other teams are like, what are you doing? Like, we have this unspoken agreement that we're going to go like 70% for the first three quarters. What are we doing here? And that'll at least let you be competitive and hang around in some games that, you know, if you're missing pieces, maybe you don't belong. at least make it interesting and make it tougher on teams who are expecting to just blow you out of the building. And as unsexy as effort is, like, sometimes that's what matters for a team that doesn't have the dudes.
Yeah, exactly. 888-957-9570 is the number if you want to get on the Warriors this week from 9 to noon every Saturday here on 95.7 The Game. That voice you just heard is Jake Hutchinson filling in for Dan Devone. Evan Giddings with you as always. From the 510 chiming in, the Warriors, to be honest, just need to shoot average three-point percentage. They're going to win a lot of games. The problem is they've been shooting 15 to 20% the last 10 to 15. You know, it's funny, like, the way that they've been playing, I remember when Mark Jackson was head coach, and people have varying, I don't know, ideas of who Mark Jackson was as a head coach. I think he did a pretty good job. But he had this, like, this go-to line whenever the Warriors would lose a game. And he would just say, well, it's a make-or-miss league. And it's like, at the time, I was like, this is the biggest cop-out I've ever heard in my life. Like, oh, yeah, we just didn't make shots tonight. But now, fast forward to 2024, 25, and that's who the Warriors are. If they make shots, even sometimes if they make shots, they won't win. But it's like, they have so many streaky shooters, like players. I mean, even like a Schroeder, who they bring in. I think people have come to the realization he's a streaky player. Buddy Hield is the definition of a streaky player. Lindy Waters III, though he's been shooting it better, is a streaky shooter. If those guys don't hit shots, even Moses Moody to some extent is a streaky shooter. If Steph's not on the floor like last night, and even when he is, they just have so many guys that could go 1-for-8 or 6-for-8, not all at the same time like they were doing the first 15 games, that I do agree with you, 510. They just need to shoot average. But the problem is they find the average in extremes. Like, one game they will shoot 55%, and one game they will shoot 20%. And they're going to lose the game when they shoot 20%. The question is it going to come against a Pistons team? Is it going to come against a Cavaliers team? Is it going to come against the Sixers, who they blew out, you know, during the homestand because they shot 60% from three? So, yes, overall, like, if I told you the Warriors' numbers, you'd actually be surprised at how middle of the pack they feel, even though they've been really bad over their last 20, 25 games. But unfortunately, on a night-to-night basis, when you watch them, you're like, God, this is just feast or famine.
I know, and it's funny. I was thinking about, you know, the game they won this week against Detroit, and it was like, oh, well, Buddy Hield crossed the 18-point threshold. It's a win. They still have not lost a game when Buddy Hield scores at least 18 points.
That's pretty cool.
Which is just wild. But that's the reality. Like, you cannot count on Buddy Hield to produce like that. And when he does, okay, you're probably good. And Schroeder, like, you know, he came through for them in those final minutes when they almost chucked it away and Steph had nothing in the tank and they started to do the thing where they get high on their own supply and just have bad turnovers and Gigi Santos is feeling himself and tries to pass one between the legs to Steph and Steph almost had a conniption on the court. But, like, that's the reality. When you acquire a guy like Schroeder, and you're kind of hoping he can come in and steady that second unit and take some of the ball handling responsibility off Steph. But it's in an offense, like, that's not the offense that matches his style. Like, he likes to slow it down, you know, isolate and penetrate and sort of just take over that way. And the Warriors are this motion offense that doesn't really fit his vibe. And I think that's part of the reason, you know, he's given them so much trouble is because he's a different sort of pace guy. And we'll see how that evolves throughout the year if he gets his touch back. But you're right. They're relying on a lot of these guys who are super streaky. And sure, if it all comes together and you get Buddy Hield and Lindy Waters, you know, and Schroeder all shooting at the same time, great. They can do a lot of things, but it feels unlikely that that's ever going to be a consistent recipe that they can rely on.
Yeah, and I think the 5-1 also hits on a good point. It's, you know, it's a major issue that they're dependent on the three. And that's because, and Kerr, you know, Kerr's honestly been going through a lot emotionally, obviously. He lost his childhood home in the Pacific Palisades, and, you know, prayers and thoughts out to everyone down in Southern California. But and I don't know if that was kind of the reason behind his frustration after the loss to Miami. In addition to, obviously, the performance, there's other stuff going on. But he just laid it all out there. He's like, well, we're one of the worst teams in terms of layups and free throws. So the Warriors don't get the easiest shots that you want. And they're streaky on making the most valuable shot in basketball, which is the three. Like, that's not an equation for success offensively. And we knew that they were always going to be offensively challenged. But the fact that they're unable to get much in the paint, that to me is, it's going to be a problem. Like, if you look at, like, I don't know if you watched the, I got a chance to see some of the OKC-Cleveland game on Wednesday, but I think it was the best game that's been played in the regular season so far. Like, when you watch both of those teams, on paper, you're like, all right, this is, you know, the top two three-point shooting teams. They shoot a high volume. But then you look a little deep and you're like, oh, like, they get into the paint.
Yeah.
Like, they can get to the free throw line. Both of those teams have guys that if they don't shoot the ball well, because maybe they go up against a good defense like the ones that they're facing on Wednesday, they can do other things that will produce points. And so they're not, they shoot the three ball very well, but the best teams in the NBA, which the Warriors used to be at this, are not reliant on the three. And the fact that they have such a low amount of layups and free throws, especially with Kuminga being out now, as much as some people don't like him, it's like they absolutely miss that aspect of offense, which hasn't even been there much.
They just lose a ton of athleticism. And you look at those two teams, they've got young guys who are physical, who are athletic, who are penetrators and can slow the game down, especially OKC. I mean, with Shea and J-Dub, those guys can attack the rim and they can slow the game down when they need to and say, all right, we're going to get ourselves a breather here. We're going to get to the free throw line. We're going to bait some fouls, quite honestly. And the Warriors are just, they just don't have anyone that can do that, really.
Yeah, can we get a foul merchant on the Warriors? A free throw merchant?
Genuinely. I mean, I think Schroeder would be the closest thing to do that, but I'm not even sure that's what he does. And just to go back to layups, I'm just thinking about how bad Draymond Green is at layups in his career. I think he might be the worst running layup player in the entire NBA. Like, the amount of opportunities that he misses, I kind of identify with it because I myself, I'm like pretty fast, but yeah. I just absolutely brick a layup in transition. So I identify with it, but I'm also not a professional basketball player. So there's an issue.
That's
there.
True.
But like, to go back to the point is that when you're not when you are reliant on threes and you're not making them and you don't really have an alternative, there's no offense. There's no balance, and it's. Those teams, the reason that they can open up the three is because they penetrate. It's like the NFL where you're like, well, we have to, you know, establish the run and then we can run play action. Like, you need to do one thing to help open up other, and it's all about spacing. And if you can't do one thing, teams can sort of sell out. And when you're not consistent at shooting the three at all, they're just going to, you know, bet on that and say, all right, you can try and beat us, but you really don't have an offense.
Yeah, and even, too, it's like just because you shoot the three ball well doesn't also, unfortunately for the Warriors, mean that you're going to win those games. Like, I mean, when they lost to the Mavericks 143-133, like, they made, what, a franchise record amount of threes? Well, and a loss, but they made, like, 27 of them, and they still lost the game. So just because you're getting a barrage of three-point makes doesn't mean that you don't need to still keep your foot on the gas pedal in regards to getting to the rim. And look, the Warriors last night without Steph, like, that's a game that, again, against the Pacers, like, they're not supposed to win. Right. I think they're 11-point dogs. They almost nearly covered. If Pat Spencer would, in the words of one of my friends, if Pat Spencer would have given up the ball in the final 20 seconds, we would have had a backdoor cover.
And Schroeder had like a couple bad turnovers at the end. They just looked so gassed because those guys were playing so hard. But yeah, they were close.
No,
they kept it close for a while.
They were somehow in the game. But that's where they need to be. Like, kind of extrapolating that one game, that's how they need to approach, I think, this stretch of the season, is to just stay in it. Stay in games. Play with some sort of, I don't know if, honestly, Jake, sometimes when you play a long stretch of games at home and you don't play well in front of the home crowd, that can be pretty deflating. Like, I think the Warriors just getting away and going to some of these, you know, tundra-laden places and just being out of Chase Center where they haven't been super successful lately, you know, like, that's to me where someone like Buddy Hield can find his stroke. Yeah. That's where maybe someone like Lindy Waters III can get it going. Just, again, they haven't looked like a confident basketball team. And that's probably why they've been, what, 7-16 in the last 23 or something like
that? Yeah, I wonder if they stopped it. Doesn't Buddy have, like, a giant basketball court in Indiana? Am I
no,
mistaken?
He does have a court in his house. Yes.
Yeah. I remember his. I feel like the Kings stopped there a few years ago to practice. But I'm with you. Like, when you get on the road, I think for a lot of these teams, when you're not, it's like when you feel tight at home. Like, you just, the crowd's not with you, they're anxious, there's more pressure, and when you get out on the road, you're not thinking about that. You're just trying to play. I go back to their offense in, like, the final minutes, and I feel like that's when it shows you what you really rely on. Obviously, without Steph, they don't really have a plan, but, like, there was no movement. They were all just standing around for those last few minutes, and I feel like that goes back to, like, when the motion offense doesn't work. You know, and you're asking a lot of old guys to keep running that. It's like they need to innovate a little bit more with that stuff. And I honestly felt like their best offense besides transition was like big men, you know, split action, like rolling to the rim, which is like a funny way to run it. But maybe you just throw a bunch of big guys out there and, you just run screens for them and have Trace Jackson Davis, you know, run split action off of that.
Yeah, and I had a sneaking suspicion this was the case, but... Yeah, Buddy Hield in 18 road games this year is shooting 42.5% from three. And in 20 home games, he's shooting 34%. It's always weird. Like, I heard, I forget who said this. I was listening to, I don't know, it might have been Inside the NBA, but one of their guests was talking about how, like, it's easier for role players to shoot at home. You know, you're comfortable, you're getting in your own bed, you got your rhythm. I don't feel like that's the case for the Warriors right now. And it's due to a, I don't know, maybe just like a larger feeling that I have that, especially with how, I guess, down to bare parts they are, because they're missing Kuminga. Pajemski's been out, though people haven't been a big fan of his. He does help the Warriors. Gary Payton II, though people are not massive fans of it, he does help the Warriors.
He's also in their best lineup of the season is Curry, Draymond, Hield,
exactly.
Payton, and Kuminga.
Exactly. So... You know, those are guys that are solid pieces. And then obviously Wiggins being out hurts too. But it's like, usually when Curry has it going, everyone's able to sort of feed off of that. I think because the Warriors have been struggling, and I didn't notice it a lot this year, but I think this year it's more, I don't know, jarring. When Curry has it going, everyone else, it's like there's pressure to make a shot because they know that this dude is still at the top of his game or close to it, and it's like all we got to do is hit a couple, and for some reason that like makes them more turtled up. You know, Buddy Hield, when he's been at home the last month, it's like he's just praying for the ball to go in so he can help Curry and everyone right now. It's like we got to do it for Steph. We got to help Steph, and sometimes that doesn't work the way you think it is. Like, you know, in football, it's like sometimes watching some of Patrick Mahomes' receivers last year. It's like, all right, all we got to do is just catch this easy pass, and then it ends up going right through your mitts. Like, there's right. Too much pressure, I think, that the role players are placing on themselves to try and help Curry in his time of need.
It does feel like, fundamentally, that's their focus, right? Is like, let's do this for Steph. It's like, how about you figure out just like how to play good basketball. And I know those aren't like mutually exclusive ideas, but it does feel like this whole operation is founded around, okay, how can we maximize this window? There's so much focus on like just Steph. It's like, no, what are we as a team, as a unit? What is the identity we are trying to build towards? And obviously Steph is your identity. He's your best player. But like, how do you have a cohesive operation that's just not single-mindedly focused so tightly and so stressed and so wound up on just like, oh, we've got this incredible guy, let's go get him a fifth ring? It's like, no, what are we building towards? What is the idea of what this franchise is supposed to be? And maybe you have to pull Steph out of the picture in some of these games and be like, all right, what is this team? Let's pretend we don't have him. And let's pretend he's not going to be back for a while, or he's going to miss a couple weeks with the knee thing. What are we? And it's pretty bleak. It's like they've tried to just fill these holes and get guys that can work. And again, they've got a lot of constraints they've faced. And, and Wiggins hasn't been what he's supposed to be. And he's missed a lot of time. And Draymond's missed time. And these guys are all getting older. And they're not what they used to be. But they just don't have anything that it feels like they're building towards. Like if Steph, and that's why there's that whole Kuminga debate, and they're like, well, we got to keep Kuminga around, even if he's not necessarily the guy, because we don't have any other building blocks.
No, they don't. And or at least the ones that they do have don't appear to be good enough to, A, just fully trust and lean into yet, or are good enough to get you a legitimate upgrade, you know, or you know, on the trade market. And I think, I don't know, it's like watching the game last night, and it wasn't necessarily pretty, but like that's the closest 10-man roster that I've seen to the 2020 season than ever. Like you go back pre-Kerr. I mean, that team last night, and again, there are injuries galore, but that's what 2020 was all about. It was about Curry being out for the season, Clay being done, Wiggins wasn't here yet. They didn't even have, I'm not even sure if they had D'Angelo Russell at that point. But like the point was that team was just, there was nothing there.
Right.
And all they were trying to do was win based on hustle and effort. It was Wiseman's first season. It's like we're just throwing guys out there and praying that they can play well.
It's a lineup that someone's going to screenshot, and then you're going to look back in 5 years and be like, what? Three of those guys are out of the league. Who is that guy? It's one of those teams, and I'm not just trying to trash the players, but like that's the reality of who they had out there. It's like Pat Spencer and Quinton Post.
He took 12 shots last night. I realize he was 7 of 12, but it's like Pat Spencer was your third, pardon me, was tied for your leading score.
Right. And you're like, I kind of like, you're, the whole game,
he
you're,
can
like,
play.
You're like, I kind of like Pat Spencer. You got a good Pat Spencer, Simone Fontecchio battle going on.
Oh, yeah. You love Fontecchio, don't you?
I mean, listen, I won't pretend I was a huge Fontecchio head before last night, but it's something where it's like if someone were to have just taken like a three-day sleep and came out of it, and we're talking Simone Fontecchio and Pat Spencer, they would go back to sleep for another 3 days. But it was entertaining. It was entertaining. And there's Gui Santos. Gui's like, mate, he's not a guy, but he's
see the Warriors Fontecchio?
Guy. He's
every team that watches the Warriors, at least lately, that's been like, who is this guy? He ain't too bad.
And he's doing the thing that Alvarado does, where in transition, like his best asset is like a steal from behind in transition. Because like no big guy is going for that. I think he thinks he's 6'2". I honestly think that's what it is, because he's kind of playing like that. You know, he's like throwing the ball between his legs. He's doing some like behind the back stuff, some flair.
Yeah.
You know?
No, he's, I think someone like Gui is a necessity for this roster from the standpoint of, like, he's someone that knows he's only going to get a few games of run. Like, actually, he might play in, I don't know, 20 games. But, like, he's going to get 4 or 5 games if the season's going right. In a season where he plays 20 or more minutes. Maybe. Like, last year, he had a game in Brooklyn that actually was, like, the beginning of the end, I think, between the Warriors and Clay, where he closed for Clay in Brooklyn, helped them win that game. But when Gui, or someone like Gui Santos, can come in, the fact that they play with freedom and the other players are playing a little bit apprehensive or look like they've been the last few weeks, like that to me is, that's helpful for the group, because you see essentially the Warriors who have been running this 13-man rotation at the beginning of the year, like Gui would be the 14th guy. So a guy who's outside of a 13-man rotation can just come in and be like, you know what? I don't give a bleep. I'm going to throw the ball through my legs. I'm going to play like I play in international competition because I know how to win. I know I'm a good player, and I just need to come in and play my game. And it's like, you know what? Lindy Waters, yeah, just play your game. Like, Pat Spencer, you know what? Go for it, okay? I don't care what you want to do. The fact that you're dribbling across the lane when you shouldn't have the ball and are putting it in harm's way, you know what? That's fine. Just go for it. Like, someone like Gui Santos, I think, is emblematic of how I want to see the Warriors approach some of these games when they don't have the majority of their characters.
It's also, yeah, it's just like when you have a guy who's young and has not played a lot and really is playing for his career every single time he's on the floor and he actually does come out and play well. It just does something for a team that basically has no energy. All season long, it's just like, it feels like every game they're like, well, he might play, he might not, he's hurt, we're tired, we're just trying to get through, and it's like, I keep looking and I keep thinking the All-Star break is going to be next weekend the way they talk about it. It's like, boys, you got some weeks to go before we get there. Like, there's some time before you get real rest. And so when you do have a guy like Gui Santos who comes out and is at least playing with energy, is at least playing like, hey, basketball's fun. Like, this is an entertainment product. Let's enjoy ourselves. I think that matters a little bit. But then you get to the point where it's like 3 or 4 games and you're like, oh, is this our team now? Are we Gui Santos and Pat Spencer and that's what the 2024 or 2025 Warriors are? Like, you get a little too much of that, and then you've crossed the pale, and that's who you are.
Yeah, I mean, last night they looked a lot closer to the pandemic Dubs than the 2022 champions that we saw a couple of seasons after that.
But maybe that's what they should be. Who knows?
We can dig into that. I don't want to take it there quite yet, but I know where you're going, and I think it'll open up an interesting conversation. If people want to get on it, 888-957-9570 is the number again, 888-957-9570. Warriors this week with Evan Giddings, Jake Hutchinson in for Dan DeVone alongside Steven Rizzono. We'll be back after this on 95.7 The Game.
Spencer dribbles on Nimhart, takes it down to the elbow, throws it to Jackson Davis, middle of the floor. Warriors need a bucket here. They're down by 13, pass to Spencer Anderson with a beautiful assist. Spencer with the back cut, and it's 96-85. Pat Spencer, career high, 15 points tonight.
Yeah, Pat was great, you know, aggressive, really attacked the paint and wasn't afraid to let it fly. He's a really good player. The game makes sense when he's out there. There's a flow to it.
Now back to Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game.
Look at Pasta coming in with the cut. Tim Roy on the call. Steve Kerr with the, well, I mean, he's got to talk about Pat Spencer. He's got to talk about somebody in this game. They lost last night to the Pacers, but overall the Warriors are a 500 basketball team. They play on Monday against the Raptors right here on 95.7 The Game. Jake Hutchinson in for Dan DeVone. Evan Giddings with you as always. You know, before we dig quickly into the Doves, this do you subscribe to the fact that this is the best weekend in sports?
I don't think so.
I've heard that thrown out. I think it's because of the NFL wild card weekend. But I was just reminded, I am a fan, the Australian Open starts today. And I'm a big tennis guy.
Yeah, that's the big one.
Along with, well, it's the first big one. There's four of them, four majors, but the first big one, and the one that my favorite player typically tends to dominate. But, you know, it's just like, I think this is when people begin to start focusing on college hoops as well. College football now has been pushed back a little bit because of the college football playoff. I guess if you include, and maybe that's what people were talking about, like the college football playoff beginning Thursday with Notre Dame winning last night with Ohio State, and then NFL Wild Card Weekend. I guess it's got a case.
It's definitely got a case. I still feel like any like March Madness weekend where it's just like a.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Thursday through the weekend, and I remember being in school and you're just like watching on your phone. There's like a mystique to that, you know, is kind of unparalleled, but this is pretty good.
I mean, I'm trying to think because, yeah, the first week of March Madness is typically my favorite of the year. I only gamble, well, mainly gamble in the month of March because I kind of have like an addictive personality and I just go down these terrible wormholes, even when I win. Which doesn't happen as much as I'd like. But, so I was like, all right, I'll only bet in March. I'll only bet for the tournament. But I got to break my rule, and we were talking about this, because my favorite team, the Chargers, play today against the Houston Texans, and I'm itchy, all right? I'm itching, and I need some sort of action on what's supposed to be a fantastic weekend of football. Did not bet on the Dubs last night, unfortunately.
Well,
I guess against the Dubs, but
there's also a hockey thing, so it's tough. But when the Stanley Cup playoffs get going, that's usually pretty good.
Are you a puckhead?
Only in the playoffs. Okay. I've been trying to get down to San Jose for Celebrini, but
dude, that is the guy to watch in the Bay Area. I know, like, there are some, you know, up and coming promising athletes. Someone, I forget if it was the morning show. With, of course, Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky, they were doing like a best under 25 in the Bay Area Ooh. Sort of list a while back. And I get it. Hockey's a little bit on, you know, the edge, and we don't talk about it much. But I don't know if there's even a clear, like, running mate with Macklin Celebrini right now.
Yeah, I guess, what is Purdy, 25? Purdy's in the
I think he's 20, he's 20, right at 25. Yeah. So, technically, he's still in there. To me, it's Celebrini, Purdy, Kuminga.
Yeah, Kuminga has to be in there just for the sake of, like, and it's so rough not having Kuminga because it's like it felt like he was finally, I don't know if he was fully turning the corner, but he was at least being more consistent. You know, he was at least getting it on the stat sheet, and you're like, all right, we can ride him a little bit more, and now it's this brutal ankle injury, and you're just like, ugh.
Yeah, and it's really, well, last year he had the, I think, the tendonitis in one of his knees that kept him out for an extended period. But nothing like this where it's just kind of a fluke injury has gone down. Like, Kuminga's actually been a pretty model citizen in regards to playing time. And that's something that I guess, and look, players are young, you don't think they're going to get hurt, but like, I've never thought about him as injury prone whatsoever. It sucks the timing of it, though, because there's these two schools of thought that either you can use Kuminga to go get an upgrade and, you know, help Curry and make this team better in the immediate, or you hold on to him, and I think you probably end up having to pay him in restricted free agency. And not that you lean into him, but, like, you just continue to try and develop, and that next contract takes him into his prime, and you see what you got with him. So, you know, it's not necessarily about picking one or the other. But this injury does put a little bit of a wrench into, I think, the camp that would try to move him.
Yeah, it does feel more. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Is it felt like, I don't know if a trade was likely or definitely going to happen, but I do think they would consider exploring that. And now with him being out, it's like he's less appealing of an asset. And you come to the point where the season's sort of going sideways and you might not achieve anything and you don't have a clear direction. So if that is the case, and it does end up where they miss the playoffs or they're in the play-in and they do the thing again where they don't get a home game and they just whiff in those play-in games and miss out completely, it feels like more and more like they're heading to, well, we're just going to re-sign Kuminga, whether it's, you know, $30 million a year for however 4 years. Like, that feels like almost the most logical, safe option for them, even though there was so much debate about what to do with him. I'm with you. I feel like the ankle injury could make that decision for them, at least going into the trade deadline.
Yeah, and this is, I like this thought from the 262. Let's be real. That was an exciting game to watch yesterday for the Dubs, even though they lost, thinking about JK coming back. Yeah, I think that game does have you thinking about the younger Warriors. And Kuminga, pretty much by process of elimination, is the head of the snake. And that's, I personally don't think that Joe Lacob wants to trade Kuminga. I think that's his guy, and whether it's because of, you know, stubbornness or because he actually thinks that he has a lot of potential, probably somewhere in the middle of both, like, he's not going anywhere, I think. Even if he was healthy, even if he was playing really well, I just don't think that there's anything out on the market that's worth what he could become.
And I do think there is a real element of Lacob, and I'm not sure how much this gets talked about, but I do think there's an element of, like, he came in, Steph was already with the team, and Steph gets so much credit for this being his franchise and building it up, and Steph basically, you know, created Chase Center and all that, and you definitely feel like Lacob bristles a little bit at that. When they talk about, oh, we have to do it for Steph, and you hear Lacob quoted, I think, on the TK show, where he was like, yeah, like, we do it for Steph, but, like, we do it for everyone. Like, I want to win. Like, everybody wants to win. And it's not that, like, he's against Steph, but it is like, he's like, well, this is my franchise, too. Like, I want to build this up. I want to be competitive. Look how much I spend. Look how competitive I am. And with Kuminga, it's like a player under his regime that they drafted, and they are developing. And it's like, so if he becomes the next star, that is like Lacob being like, oh, this is my imprint. This is something we've created, and Kirk Lacob being involved. Like, there is a little bit of an element of, like, well, we can do this without Steph. Like, we can build up this franchise. And I'm not saying that's entirely driving Lacob, but I really do think that's a real element of him being like, Steph is aging and older, and obviously Steph is incredible, and we want to build this thing around him, and we want to win a title with him, but I want to show people that I can do this. Because, like, you know, billionaires, he's achieved everything, right? Except making the Warriors a competitive, successful franchise without Steph Curry. I do think there is a real element of, like, let me go prove to people I can do that. Not necessarily today, tomorrow, the next two, three years even, but down the line, let me prove I can do that. Let me show people that I can run this franchise when Steph leaves, and that we are going to have a competitive product out there.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that, and I think it's fascinating, kind of the, I don't know, the back and forth that people have with Lacob, because obviously he's a big reason. Like, you're not going to be able to write the history of the Warriors without him. And when you think of this dynasty, he might not be the first person, but he's in the top five. Like, he's on the Mount Rushmore of the dynastic faces for Golden State in this era. And even without the light years term, it's like, it's Steph. I think Jerry West deserves to be somewhere in that conversation. You know, just going off the top, Steve Kerr, Bob Myers, and then, you know, the Clays, the Dres, but Joe is somewhere in that mix, and he's probably higher up than I've given him credit for.
Well, owners shape everything. Like, if you have an owner who's chaotic and disastrous, like, you can't do anything. Even if they're hands-off, like, having a hands-off owner who just puts money forward is everything in the world, so he has to be on that list.
But that's where I think he's different. It's like, he is very hands-on, and right, they still managed to be successful. So clearly he's doing something right. I want to dig deeper into that in a minute, but I want to get the conversation rolling with some of our callers. 888-957-9570 is the number. Jake Hutchinson in for Dan Devone alongside Evan Giddings. Pasta with us as always. Pasta, can we go to John in Oakland? Wants to talk about the Warriors and their rotations. What's up, John? Good morning.
Good morning, guys. So what I wanted to go talk about was, you know, the offense and how it's being set up. I mean, if you hear Kerr on his post-game reviews with talking about Jonathan Kuminga in the past and how, you know, Steph, you got to get the ball to Steph. You got to get the ball to Steph. Steph's around. You got to go pass the ball to him. And it's like we're centering everything around Steph. I mean, rightfully so, but it actually short circuits the entire team, so much so that you got guys that are afraid to shoot, and especially when you're passing the ball around the motion offense, and that's your primary way of moving things around. It just makes for some chucking the ball, you know, making for chucking the ball at the end of the shot clock, and that's how come, you know, the percentages are low. And it really centers around how we're running the offense and really how the coaching is centering everything a certain way. So that's my perspective, guys.
Thanks, John. Yeah, and I mean, one of those figureheads we were talking about, Steve Kerr, is absolutely involved in this. I don't know. I've kind of gone back and forth with him, Jake, about Like, the amount of criticism that I'll put at his doorstep, because I definitely think that there's been some games this year in which he's been at fault for, maybe even the reason at times why they've lost. But as the season has gone on, and specifically this stretch of, you know, 7-16 over 23 games basketball has gone on, and seeing how frustrated he's become, and even using words like, well, it's personnel, or this is what we're bad at, it's like, I don't necessarily believe that there's just another head coach or even someone on staff that can help steer this thing back to where people ideally want it to be. Sure, could they be a couple games better? I'm not going to say that that's out of the realm of possibility, but like, if I'm looking at reasons that the Warriors are going to turn this thing around, Kerr's involved, but I don't really know how much he can do.
Right. I think there's two things. But number one is, like, they do not have the dudes. Like, they just don't have the dudes to be a really competitive roster. And that's why, you know, the way they started the season when they had D'Anthony Melton, we're like, anything is possible. This team is, are they going to do it? And then D'Anthony Melton goes out and we're like, oh, this is actually not a good team. This is actually a mediocre team that could maybe overachieve or probably be right in the middle, maybe be somewhere where they're competing for a play-in spot. And so that's the reality. And Kerr, yeah, he's definitely messes with rotations at times and waits too long to put some guys in, tries to buy a little bit of extra rest and bites him. Maybe he doesn't call timeouts the way you want. Basketball is so situational, and you try and like go with the flow of it. You can make a lot of mistakes, and in hindsight, it's so easy. I think there's so many decisions that have to be made in the course of the game. I think it's one of the easiest sports to just say, oh, he messed up that decision and that decision. It's like, well, there's 150 little decisions a game to be made, so of course you're going to mess some of them up, or they might not go the right way. Or, hey, that player's not actually very good, or that player is not really consistent right now, and you try and put him in the game and get something going, and it doesn't work out. I do think the other sort of criticism that you might have of Kerr is like the foundation of the offense with like an aging point guard and Draymond Green still having it be a motion offense, mm-hmm. right? That's something you talk about, is like, do they have to evolve and take some of the burden off? And I think they have tried in certain ways, and Steph has tried to sort of pick his spots a little bit more. But at the same time, like, it's a lot on him to, especially with the knee issue and just trying to get around screens and just fight constantly. And they do have some pieces with like Schroeder and Kuminga who I don't think really fit in emotion offense. And I think it goes to something like a few weeks ago, we talked to Greg Cosell and talked about evolving like the 49ers scheme. And it's like, It's really hard for coaches to say, all right, this thing we've been doing forever, let's change it fundamentally. And I think that applies to every sport. And so it's like the Warriors have run like a motion oriented offense for, you know, a decade, and they're just going to change it just because Steph is getting a little bit older and they have some different pieces. I think that's a hard thing for them to do. And I'm not saying they have to get rid of all these actions and all these things they do, but I think there is an element of evolution that probably needs to happen sooner than later. But it's also tough when all of these guys are injured and you have all these moving parts, and you can really only do that, I think, at the start of the season and in training camp. You know, and unless you just have something that starts to click and guys have a chemistry where you can evolve to a different offense midseason, and without Kuminga being out there, it's tough to say you can do that.
Yeah, I mean, like, if Steve Kerr was a bartender and is trying to make a White Russian, but he doesn't have vodka and he doesn't have heavy cream, wait, he can't make a White Russian. But like,
he's just drinking Kahlua out the bottle.
which actually ain't too bad. But the point is, like, all right, so if I have a couple of things, like, let's say I have the coffee liquor and I have the Kahlua. All right, well, maybe I can take some melted butter and whole milk and like whip that together, and I can try and make some sort of substitute. And I don't have vodka, but I have gin. It's like, but at the end of the day, that's not a White Russian. Like,
right, you're just a college kid trying to mix alcohols together and just to see what happens.
Exactly, and he's had so many ingredients removed that, again, it's like you can still make a good drink, but you can't make the drink that I'm ordering, which I've ordered for the last 10 years, which has been damn good, and I like it mixed that way, and you can't do it for me anymore. So, thank you, Steve. That's in about 3 hours. But the thing is, like, you know, again, it's to me, it's kind of an impossible task. And what they're asking him to do, I think that there's a question about, you know, is Steve Kerr the right coach for this kind of team? And I don't think we've gotten to that point yet. Like a younger team, more of a developmental-based team. Because if Curry's on it, I think Kerr's got to be with it. If Draymond's on it, Kerr's got to be at the helm. You know, just like similar to the conversations we were having over the last couple of weeks about, okay, well, like is Steph turning up the heat in regards to, you know, maybe a potential trade or looking down the line and seeing where he wants his future to be, trying to contend for a championship. Like, I don't think we're there yet, but I'm sure these are things that all of these guys have talked about or at least thought about. Like, the thought of them not being able to compete, not for a championship, but for the playoffs. Like, that's something that I feel like I've heard more often over the last month after post games. Just, well, you know, the whole, we're not built to come back. Or, well, it's a personnel issue. Or, well, I don't know. Or my favorite, which is, I don't know if you notice like some of the 49ers ticks when they're at the podium, but Steph,
oh yeah,
he taps when he doesn't know what to say.
Yeah, that was Kyle Shanahan when they asked him about special teams, and when he had a water bottle cap that he started shaking violently with anger, and John Lynch answered the question for him. It was pretty fun.
Was that Kawakami that asked that question?
Yes, and he was pissed.
Yeah,
he was pissed.
Kyle was going to jump across that table and just like assault him.
Yeah, a guy who has objectively said he like doesn't care about special teams. Anyway, Warriors.
No, but but I think like we're getting to the point now where some of those quotes are now being thrown back at the Warriors the way that TK in that situation. I mean, he didn't mean to like throw it back.
Because you can like joke about certain things and be like, yeah, we don't take this part of our game that seriously because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And then it'll come back and you're like, oh, well, didn't you said this part of the game
like,
doesn't matter.
Like, obviously I didn't mean it like that, but.
Right. But then it does matter because you're not as good, you're not as talented, and maybe you have to evolve. And then those quotes come back to bite you and you go, well, you know, okay, you're right, but shut up. Like, that's sort of the vibe.
Well, no, it's funny you mention that because there was a Tim Kuehn piece on Steph that came out last week for ESPN. And in the piece, there was a quote from Kerr about how he kind of regrets, I think it was the 2021 season, where he talked about chasing wins. And that's been, I don't know if thrown back in his face is the appropriate way to put it, but it's like, that's kind of been brought up. Like, well, are you chasing wins tonight? Like, against Detroit. So this back-to-back, and Rick Celebrini's the one that clears players to play or not, but Curry's older. He's been dealing with knee tendonitis. Now has a sprained thumb, which apparently he's been dealing with for four games. Like, they're making choices about which games he's going to play in. Okay, so, like we talked about it, which game are you chasing? Like, which game do you think legitimately you have a better chance to win? Let's go use Steph and try and get that one. Now, ironically, it was like his worst shooting performance of the season against Detroit, but they clearly were trying to chase that win. So, you know, this idea that it's like, that was 3 years ago, or 4 years ago now, where he talked about chasing wins, but now it's more prevalent than ever. And they really have to be careful, it feels like, picking and choosing where to use Curry, because I think they realize that if they try and play him 28 minutes a night and have him for most games, they're not going to be able to get those wins. Like, he still has to play 34 minutes a game for them to win. And now it's like, all right, instead of shrinking his minutes, we're actually going to just shrink the games that he's playing.
It's this impossible situation, and it goes back to, like, if you're trading for somebody, right? Like, you need these, like, this big, well, not even the big rotation because guys are hurt, but you need this many guys on the roster because your stars are older and they need to miss games to even stay healthy. But in order to have a roster like that where you have, you know, 14 guys and, you know, and four through, you know, whatever are not real huge difference makers, they're sort of rotational pieces. You get in a situation where you need all those guys, but like they're not leveling you up. So you're going to be like a mediocre team. But if you go and make a move and you ship a bunch of them off, you don't have the pieces to get through the season. So it's this like catch 22 of this roster. And the same thing with Steph, where it's like you're trying to bet. And it's like, are you better off shutting him down like a week before the All-Star break and trying to buy 2 weeks and saying, all right, we might lose this 2 weeks, but those 2 weeks of him resting might actually buy us, you know, an extra 2 or 3 weeks of wins going forward in the season.
Yeah.
And it's this impossible situation of, like, this is what happens when you have a 36-year-old point guard who's aging and has to run around a ton and has fluid in his knees. And it's just like, what are you supposed to do when that is your entire team?
And this is from the 415. Again, 888-957-9570 is the number if you want to text in, join the conversation, call in. Warriors this week, Evan Giddings alongside Jake Hutchinson in for Dan Devone. From one of our favorites, No, who always seems to be in some, like, I don't know, place of, like, a utopia. I mean, he always texts in and says where he's at. One time it was, like, eating breakfast at a place on Divisadero. Another time it's him gardening. He might be walking his dog. It sounds like some blissful location. I'm not sure where he's at today.
There's only one place to eat breakfast on Divisadero, and I will not mention it because more people don't need to be going there.
Is it on Eddie?
Don't worry about where it is.
Don't worry about where it is. It's not. If we're thinking about the same place, you're right, because it's not very big. All right. So in my opinion, this is from No. It's not dudes plural, it's dudes singular. They don't have the dude yet. It sounds like we're talking about a cult movie. Yet the dude is a rim, paint-protecting pick, roll big man. They have everything else on the roster, they just need that one dude. So this is, and I guess I'll throw this to our listeners as well, 888-957-9570. If you do believe that the Warriors are one dude away, who is that dude? Or I guess a better question would be, what kind of dude is that? Because I think we saw, like, for example, last night, Quentin Post got on the floor, looked like a nice, you know, stretch five. Nikola Vucevic is a name that we will talk about as being a potential option for the Warriors. He might be the best guy out there. I'm not saying he's this player, but last year, I remember there was a fawning for Dario Saric, who was a stretch big, couldn't defend the paint, was a traffic cone on defense. But he started games for the Golden State Warriors.
Had some really good stretches last year.
He did? Kind of. I guess I never bought it. But you're right.
And then he was unplayable.
Yeah. And that's kind of my point. Like, just because there is someone who can shoot the ball on a team that's devoid of shooting doesn't mean that they're always going to be the answer for this team. Like, I personally don't believe that the Warriors are one dude away.
You don't think Justini and Jessup is coming over?
Justini and Jessup. Yeah, I think Smiley Geach is available, too. Yeah, actually, yeah, Jessup's still in the cupboard, right?
I think they still have his draft rights somewhere in Australia or something.
Got it. Well, it actually is funny. Well, we have a minute here. Some of the old, like, I don't know, articles that were written about some of these, like, developmental prospects picking up. Like, what was the headline about Smiley? It was like, the greatest Golden State secret you haven't heard of yet, or something.
It's awesome. It's always like, this is the most brilliant under the radar move, and it's like, oh, he's actually just not an NBA player. But
I think they have more NBA players on this team than they did, like, on the 2020 roster. But again, and I hate to say it, but it's like I did feel like at times yesterday I was watching 2020 basketball where I'm like, oh my God, they're playing hard, they're in it. But at no point did I think that they were going to beat the Indiana Pacers.
No. And it felt like the Pacers were just sort of hanging around and, all right, you guys can be in it, and there's like a 10-point buffer that's constantly. And then they would get it down to like 5 points, and then in 2 seconds it would be a 14-point lead for the Pacers.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the reality.
Yeah. And this is an interesting name, too. You know, I feel like a lot of people are stuck on the bigs. So we could talk about that. There's also a juicy piece of sound involving a spicy conversation between Lacob and Dunleavy. They came out earlier this week from Stan Amick. I want to get into what it means and where the Warriors are trying to figure out what direction they're going. Because I think one of the issues that I have with the Warriors right now is not necessarily the messaging, but just the direction. Like, where, again, they're 19-19. They're 500. They need to go one way or the other. And people don't want to believe that they could go the wrong way, which is unfortunately where it feels like they've been for the better part of a month and a half. But if you want to get into the conversation, Warriors This Week will roll on. 1 hour in, 2 hours to go, 9 to noon every Saturday on 95.7 The Game. That's Jake Hutchinson. My name is Evan Giddings, 888-957-9570. We're back after this.